Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello again, and welcome to My Time Capsule. This is the podcast where I ask people what five things from their life they would like to preserve in a time capsule. They can choose four things that they cherish and one that they would like to be rid of because it's unfair or embarrassing. And then we talk about them and why they've chosen them. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest this week is the actor Tony Gardner. In fact, Dr. Tony Gardner, a title he qualified for at Guy's Hospital in London in 1987. He started performing as part of the comedy double act Struck Off and Die with Dr. Phil Hammond, and was so successful that he finally left medicine behind and concentrated on acting. What a sensible man. He was Brian Johnson in the long-running children's TV series My Parents Are Aliens, and Michael, the cafe owner in Jack D's sitcom Lead Balloon. But he's also been in Fresh Meat, Tracy Ullman Show, Bluestone 42, Lovesick, Unforgotten, Death in Paradise, and he's John in the brilliant Last Tango in Halifax. And that doesn't even scratch the surface. But when I talked to Tony in his dressing room where he was getting ready for that evening's performance, anyone remember those days? We didn't really talk about his career. We talked about the things in his life that he cherished. And here they are.
So how big is this time capsule?
As big as you like. So I can also can take concepts rather than actual physical things.
Okay, I don't want it too big because of the impact on the environment, Mike. Funny enough, I was looking up the Blue Peter ones because that's the only time capsules I know. And I remember the one in 19... I looked it all up today, but I remember watching that one on telly in 1971. Yeah. With Noakes and Singleton and Purvis, and they buried theirs. And I remember having the annual that I got for Christmas, and it said, you know, we were just all sitting around. They do this little article, don't they, in the annual, in the Blue Peter annual. And we were saying, we've got the only our second ever millennium coming up in the year 2000, and what should we do? And we should do a time capsule. I remember that. And I always remember, and I was, that was when God knows how old I've been, 71. God, I was seven. And I remember counting up, thinking, oh, I'll be 35, that's amazing, oh, that'll be crazy, that's mad. So I was really quite into that whole concept of them putting this thing away and what it would be like. And I was thinking, I wonder if I'll be the one who remembers where it's going to be. But they've all got little stories behind them, haven't they? Because they opened it up live and in 2000, and Singleton, Noakes and Purvis were there. And they didn't want to do... It wasn't just live because they thought that it might all be completely disintegrated.
Yeah, falling apart.
Yeah, so they opened it up. And so there was a delay on it, but it was okay. There was an annual, that annual that I had, I think, that had perished a bit. And there was Blue Peter badges and pictures of Petra or whatever and stuff. It was all stuff about Blue Peter. And some decimal coins, because that was the year of decimalisation, 1971. And it was all okay, except that it had all been wrapped up. So someone had opened it. And then when they moved it, or when they redid the Blue Peter Garden and rewrapped it all up in cling film or something, and so it wasn't quite open for... But the other story is that it stank, it really smelled. Valerie Singleton was sort of just moaning about how much it smelled and stuff. So that's my experience of time capsules. So the first thing I wanted to put in was my first car. And for some reason, I was 15, and I grew up in Wiltshire, and my dad was a lorry driver, and there was some guy selling this car, and he bought it when I was 15, and we kept it in a woman's garage up the road till I was 17, and it was a beach buggy. So my first car was a bright purple glitter beach buggy, and I just loved that car with an absolute passion. It was just hilarious. It was rubbish, made of fiberglass, no doors, just a little rumble seat in the back, and a Volkswagen engine made an enormous noise. Two big exhaust pipes coming off the back, and big Jag wheels on it. It sounds spectacular, but it was a rough old thing. It had the petrol cap was from an old bus, and it was always breaking down. I give people a lift in it, because usually the starter motor wouldn't work, and I drive it to sixth form. And if you gave me a bump start, then you could have a lift. We just had so much fun in that. And I even went to France in it twice, drove this thing. It had seatbelts, not in the back. The back bit didn't have seatbelts. And we drove to France in it a couple of times, just said, right, let's all go to France. And it had these little frog lights at the front. And when we were driving from Calais to the campsite, it was dark. And my friend who came with me, they were like a 6-volt battery, so it wouldn't work anyway. And we'd painted them yellow, and they would always spin round. So my friend had to stand up, lean over the front as we're driving along, and spin them back round so they were facing the right way. So that was, yeah, I was stopped by the police on the first day I drove it around Trowbridge in Wiltshire. And here we go, I'm going to get stopped all the time. And I was this 17-year-old lad from the local comprehensive, but they knew that he was in six, you know. Anyway, they looked, checked that I had insurance, checked that I had a driving license, and that was it. They never touched me again. And that was my, so for about 3 years I used to drive that around the roads of Wiltshire. And so I'd like a photograph of that. Okay. Or can I have that?
You can put it in.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be able to find a photograph. I'm very happy with photographs, because I think that's less impact. I don't want to bury a huge beach buggy. That's just ridiculous. Plus, I've looked it up, because you can look up registrations. 209 FXE. You always remember the registrations of your first car, don't you? And I've looked it up and seen if it's still registered or if it's in storage. No, it's not. It's gone.
It's gone?
Yeah. Well, that registration's gone. And you'd always keep that registration, I think, as well.
Yeah. So I think some people transfer the registration from car to car.
Yeah, well, I would do. In retrospect, I would do now, because it would be nice to have 209 FXE. But, yeah, so much fun. And so...
Completely impractical, though.
It was good. Got me to school and back. I lived 9 miles from school. It was so much fun. And
it never rained in Wiltshire.
Well, he had a hood, you know. Oh, right. You could stick the hood on. But yeah, it was a bit rough in the winter. I suppose it reflects what an idyllic childhood I had. I really did. And I was an only child. And so it also reflects, perhaps I was a bit spoiled and stuff, but not in a bad way. It was nothing for my dad. Of course he's going to buy a car from the guy, one of the lorry drivers, and keep it in a garage for me to have when I'm 17. and we all have fun with it as a family. So it was it's a nice symptom of what a joyous childhood I had and the fun we had as a kid. So to have this beach buggy, I'm very proud of it. And it didn't have a name or anything, but it was fun. Yeah. So that's number one, beach buggy. So I don't mind putting a steering wheel in it, but we couldn't find it. I thought about that, or a wheel, but just a photo, we'll be fine.
All right. We'll just put the photo in there then. So your dad was a lorry driver.
Yeah.
And you ended up qualifying as a doctor.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And
that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to a...
Or is it just you? You're just a genius.
No. It's my dad who made me work, actually. Mm-hmm. They just instilled me just a desire from a very young age to work hard and to be a doctor from a young age, which is what I wanted to do. So here we're coming on to my second
thing. Okay.
And there's quite a lot of people, it's sort of, I'm always asked about being a doctor, it comes up all the time, and I used to get a bit nervous about it. Not nervous, just thinking, actually, no one else talks about it, I'm going to keep quiet about it now. But I always do, and it's because it actually does define me. I wouldn't be an actor if I hadn't been a doctor. Absolutely not, you know. And so my dad and mum, no one in my family had ever taken an exam, let alone go to university. But I went to Guy's Hospital, and I qualified as a doctor. And then when I did my house jobs, met Phil Hammond,
And we did the Christmas show, and then 3 years later, he said, I've just done 10 minutes stand-up on medicine. I said, let's go to Edinburgh. And we took a show to Edinburgh in 1990, and that's how I got into this business. Mm.
So what I'd like to put in is...
And I said, I'm enormously, the proudest day of my life, to, apart from when my kids achieve things, but it was the day I qualified as a doctor. And so I'd like to put in my medical certificate from Guy's Hospital.
Brilliant.
Because that really defines who I am, and I'm very proud of it. All my friends are doctors. I was very proud to become a doctor. My wife's a doctor. My son's just got into med school. You know, it's still it's very much part of our lives. And it gave me everything. It gave me... an opportunity to, we used to go to Edinburgh with the London Hospital, even though guys didn't go up. I went to the London and performed, and did, but I still didn't ever think I was going to get into this business. I just lucked out by going up with Phil to Edinburgh in 1990 as a double act, Strokoff and I, and just fell into acting. And because I married a doctor, it was enabled me to leave general practice, the little that I was doing, and become an actor. But
and that was late enough not for you to feel a sense that you were letting your parents down, having got that far.
There was a bit of that going on. Even when I started doing telly and things, Dad would always say, you know, he said, well, you've still got, keep it in you, you know, you can still go back to it, Tone, you know, he's Bristol. So you can still go back to it, you've got to go. So I always felt a little sense of, he's not doing the right things. They only want the best for you. Mm. And so I think I'd have to ask him, but I think it took him a little while to get over it. But then they started enjoying the success. But I only think it was doing Last Tango that they suddenly had a programme that they could identify with and their friends could identify with, that they went, yeah, brilliant, Tony, that's really good, actually. You maybe give up medicine. Dad, I haven't done it for 20 years.
You finally did a programme they could watch.
Yeah, it's just a... It's a weird thing, yeah. I wouldn't recommend that route by any means, but it's given me everything. And like I say, it totally defines who I am. It was by becoming a doctor and meeting the people I've met, and it's very much part of who I am, and it always will be. And I loved it. I really love being a doctor. But then I also love this. But
it takes a long time to train as a doctor, though, doesn't it?
When I did it, it was 5 years, six. And then you have to do... Then we did a house job for a year, and then... And then it's 3 years to train to be a GP, yeah. Wow. So I sort of went to be a GP. So, yeah, it went on and on. But I sort of broke up my GP training by taking 6 months off and doing locums so that Phil and I could go to Edinburgh and things. But, and it's interesting having a son who's about to go to medical school, because I wouldn't wish, you know, I don't want him to run away to join the circus the way I have. But it's just fortune, it's not... Just when things sort of fall into place, they just do. I just happened to find something else I like just as much, and to be honest, was making a career out of it. I'd started doing My Parents Are Aliens by the time I completely finished meds, working as a GP. But it's funny how it's all come full circle. But I'm so proud of my son going to med school. It's ridiculous. That I was going to put in the achievements of my children as a concept, because that trumps everything I've ever done, and from getting grade one piano all the way up to getting into university, graduating from university, I did mention that to my eldest, and he just said, that's ridiculous. So why don't you put in world illness, or, you know, childhood disease? I said, yeah, fair enough, I won't put that, but at least I mentioned it, because that's the thing I'm most proud of, is anything my children do and achieve, and you know, getting into a sports team or anything like that. But when you have kids, you sort of realize that it's interesting that sort of always, which is probably was for my parents, so that must have been a terrible disappointment before. But anyway, so not that. So I've got in my beach buggy and my medical certificate. I don't know where it was in my mum and dad's house in France for years, and mum died and a couple of years ago, and dad has moved back, and I've got it now. I'm not quite sure where it is. It is in a frame. I've always wanted to put it in the loo, just to sit, not because I'm, but we've got a sort of like a trophy loo that's got the RTS award from My Parents' Radios and things, and lots of play posters and things. But my dad was always a bit reticent about me putting it in the loo. I don't think that's very funny, Tony. It's not. You don't want to put that.
That's where you go when you're ill.
You need to be very proud of that. Where's the middle loo? So we don't.
Oh, right. Okay. Nobody goes in there.
No, the middle loo's just for trophies. And, so I think that's, yeah, that, the fact that it's got my med school on it, and my wife was at my med school, and my friends are from my med school, and I'm very much guys. And yeah, so that means a lot to me. So if anyone or myself opens it up, I'll go, oh, yeah, look, he had a beach buggy. He was spoiled. Spoilt little brat in Wiltshire, and then he became a doctor. So there you go.
So did you have an ambition to be an actor when you were young?
No, never at all. I always had an ambition to be a doctor. But, you know, I look back and I remember seeing an Anna Scher documentary. God, that must have been. I looked it up recently, actually, to see when it was, and I think it was 69, 70. I remember watching that and just being, wow, what an amazing thing that these... And I remember seeing the kids on Why Don't You and stuff, and... You know, in these programmes that would have Oliver Twist and things like that, just thinking it was amazing. But by that time, I'm going to be a doctor. You know, I had to give up every, you know, all the art subjects and do all the sciences, and you just become a scientist. And it's very strange going back to it now, and sort of, which is why I love it. So every time I get a play, I read every play going by that author, and I'm sort of learning on the job, which is what I've done all the way along, really.
Lovely. Well, we're going to put your medical certificate into the time capsule.
Hurrah.
So what's your third item?
Right. So this is the next thing. Something else that absolutely, totally, 100% defines me as a person. Now, I could have a picture of my kids, which I've mentioned before, but I think I can combine the two here. But it's got to be something to do with the Glastonbury Festival. And Glastonbury is somewhere that Kate and I first went. I used to live nearby. Never went. It was there from 1970, but I never went. And I didn't go until after we went to... I think our first Glastonbury was 97. Kate and I went, and then... or 96. And then it's just turned into this huge thing that... I remember the next year, a few more friends from guys came, a few more. And so now it's a huge group of us that go every year. I think we've got 80 going this year. And it's friends and extended friends and our friends' kids, with the proviso that they're over 16. So some of them are in their 30s now, these kids, but occasionally we've let a sort of, Kate and I have taken us ones under 16, and it's a different festival. It's very much our holiday, our chance to meet up with friends, huge part of all our lives. It's brought us all closer together. You wouldn't see these friends, you know, that live at the other side of the country, but every year we see each other for 5-6 days. And it's... Maybe I'd like to put in, as a concept, I'll put in the Thursday of the Glastonbury Festival. Okay? That's the best. That's just off the top of my head now, but that is the best day of the year. And people say, what do you mean? Well, we turn up on the Tuesday night, we camp, because there's so many of us, we take all the tents of those people that can't go, we sleep in the queue, and then we get in at 8 o'clock, put all the tents up. Wednesday's great. Wednesday night, we're down the side of bus. Thursday, we're always outside the West Holtz Bar all day. There's not much music on. So that Thursday, when the music starts, everyone's doing different things. There's 250,000 people in the field all going crazy, doing different things. But that Wednesday and Thursday, it's a chance to just talk with your friends for an entire day and sit in the sunshine and drink cider. There's a Brothers Pear Cider bar, and we always have one or two of those. They do these terrible, beautiful fruit ciders, but you can only have two because it just sends you nuts. But that sets you up for the day. They have a different thing. You might have coconut or a lime one or whatever, and you have a couple of those. It's pretty much like having a pint of weak wine. I mean, it gets you absolutely wrecked. But everyone knows we're going to be there. Charlotte Ritchie popped past, because everyone just knows Thursday we'll be outside. I've told everyone that, but it doesn't matter. Anyone who's at Glastonbury is very welcome to come and say hello. So that the Thursday of Glastonbury, before the music starts, outside the West Holtz Bar, that's going in the thing. Let's put that in as a concept.
Lovely.
You know, as you get older, you make friends, and your university friends are always the best friends, or the friends from those years, because you spent so many hours together, getting bored together, living in the same flats together, making mistakes together. So they're already my close friends. Now, as you get older, you make friends, you might have two or three dinner parties a year, but you don't, or go on a golf, I don't play golf, but go on holiday possibly. But when you're having kids, you just, you know, you don't make these sort of close friends anymore. Your real friends, closest friends, that's why I believe that they're your friends from school and university. And so the chance to, in later life, still hook up with those people and then sit for a whole day outside a bar, hopefully in the sunshine, drinking Brothers Pear Cider, just the two pints, and then going on to session lager, is the best day of the year. it means so much to us all. And yeah, and then we just have a wonderful experience. So it is the Glastonbury Festival, but it's particularly the Wednesday, the Thursday outside the West Holt's Bar. That's my favourite day of the year.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I've only been to Glastonbury Festival once, and I went there to perform. And then, so I stayed there, but I went with my son, who was an adult by then.
Yeah.
And of course, he knew all about the Glastonbury Festival. He'd been lots of times.
Yeah.
So he was able to show me around.
Oh, great. So you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
I think it's brought us closer to our kids. I really do. I think it's not in a sort of, oh, aren't they wonderful, aren't they fantastic, but we all go to the festival together and we all camp in the same area. And so there's always someone back there. And it's just as likely to be one of the kids, like I say, are in their 20s anyway now, as it is to be, you know, one of us sort of thing. And so we all just muck along and in the way that music has brought us together, because we all like the same thing. And that festival in particular has brought us together. Because it's not just the adults who are outside the West Holt's Bar, it's everyone. They all do it as well. That Thursday is just fantastic.
And it's important, isn't it, for your children to see you acting as you would with other adults.
Yeah, that can go the wrong way. But yeah, no, it's not. I agree. I know what you're saying. And yeah, they just see us warts and all. They just know we're just as mad as they are. But it's a shared experience. Yeah. Like all arts, it's a shared experience, really, isn't it, going to theatres and cinemas and stuff, and Glastonbury is very much about, still, even though there aren't campfires, but sitting around in a circle staring into a fire and chatting.
Yeah.
And Joe Strummer was the big fan of that, and there's so many times at Glastonbury during the weekend you will sit around the fire and just have a chat and just do stuff that you wouldn't normally do. It's a very magical place. It's a brilliant place. I've now diluted it to sitting outside a bar drinking cider on a Thursday. But yeah, it's much more spiritual than that, of course. Depends who your god is.
Yeah. The god of cider.
Yeah, mine's Mr. Brother, who makes that cider.
So where are we? What have we put in so far?
We've put in the concept of sitting outside the West Holt's Bar on the Thursday of Glastonbury.
Mm-hmm.
My medical certificate, a beach buggy.
Yes.
Or part thereof. And possibly I don't want my whole medical degree in there, actually. Can I just have a really good copy of it?
Yes. Yeah, thank you. I'm sure we can get in touch with guys and get them to give us a copy of it.
Yeah, yeah, if they're still talking to me.
We're going to take a short break here for some adverts. We'll be back very shortly.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome back. Okay, let's find out what the fourth thing is that Tony Gardner would like to put into his time capsule.
I want to put in, say, I want to put in something to do with skiing, because that's something that is very much part of my life. Again, I went with the school for the first time and then got my parents to get into it. I don't think they ever really had any intention of, but we had some lovely holidays. So, yeah, despite me always saying I'm from a working class background, yes, my dad was a lorry driver, but we did go skiing because I really wanted to. And so I've skied since I was about 12, 13, and my kids now ski, and it's just where I'm, apart from sitting outside, apart from Glastonbury, is where I'm happiest. in the mountains and skiing. So just maybe the ski boot that I've had longest, just one of my ski boots. I'm going to get a new pair next year, so I don't mind you just putting in my yellow Salomon ski boot that's been all over the world with me, including heli skiing. I went heli skiing for my 40th birthday. And
so you're a good skier.
I'm all right. I mean, I could be a lot, should be a lot better, but I've just sort of, you know, you just go once a year sort of thing. But good enough to, yeah, get down most things. And the heli skiing was extraordinary. And my whole
Where was that? Where did you do that?
Canada. God. Yeah. I've got a big Canada connection because I went, in our final year of med school, you had to go somewhere in the world for 2 months to learn about medicine in another country. And, you know, people either went to sort of, you know, third world countries or did amazing things in jungles in Borneo and Papua New Guinea or wherever, and or you could go to Australia and have a beach holiday and do nothing, or go, me and my mate went to Canada because we were big skiers and we were assisting an operation probably about the first or second day we were there, and he's saying, so why do you come to Kamloops? I said, well, because quite keen skiers. And he said, oh, I've got a condominium up on the mountain there, Todd Mountain. Why don't you go up there? My kids are coming back from UBC, the University of British Columbia, in a couple of days, and they'll join you, and you don't need to be here. So off we went. And that's and I'm still friends with all those lovely people, the Mitchells, and so that's why, yeah, we go to Canada, and got loads of great, great friends there. And so I went heli skiing in Canada with one of the Mitchells, yeah, this surgeon's son. And yeah, that was a hell of an experience. That was amazing.
What's your favourite resort? Where is the place you most enjoy?
Anywhere where the snow's good. But it has been Canada, yeah, yeah. It was called Todd Mountain when I was there. It's now called Sun Peaks. And I've had more great times there and good snow there. And I've taken Kate there and my wife and my kids have been there. And we'd like to go there again, back up to Todd. But it's just good skiing and good people and empty slopes and so Todd Mountain maybe.
I've been to Colorado.
Oh wow, I haven't skied America.
It was too high. I suffered from altitude.
Oh really? What was it, over 3,000 meters or something?
I just went up there too quickly, just got in the car and we flew to Colorado and just got in a hire car and just drove straight up there.
What was it, Aspen?
Keystone.
Wow.
And the thing I liked most about it was that they give you a key card for your room, and then that acted as a credit card for everything in the town. At the end of the week, they gave you a bill for your
give
room.
You a massive bill because you didn't feel massive. Like you were spending anything.
Massive. It was the first time I realised how dangerous credit cards would be.
Yeah, yeah. Man, yeah. So, yeah. So then I would... So those four things. So that's, yeah, the ski boot would... That's... So if I open that up, I'd be going, oh, there's my ski boot.
You have two rather expensive holidays to save up for every year, don't you? Glastonbury's not every year.
It's every year apart from every fifth. Every fifth is fallow, and obviously this year because of the coronavirus. But who knows? It is our holiday. It's nuts. It is our holiday.
And you come back and need a holiday.
Yeah, come back absolutely exhausted. Everyone was putting pictures of what they were doing on. Usually everyone takes the Tuesday off as well, the Monday and the Tuesday. But the Wednesday, all these photos are coming through with architects just looking like crap and various offices and dentists and orthodontists and my friends and looking down microscopes because he's a pathologist and surgeons all with masks on, all looking like shit, thinking, oh my God, I'm still covered in glitter and all this. And me in some voiceover booth trying, it was a pickup for a voiceover I'd done the week before. So my voice was about an octave lower.
Throaty voice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, them all with proper jobs, me with this bloody pair of headphones on, just going, you know, talk, test, treat today, or whatever it was I was doing. So I was the voice of erectile dysfunction for many years.
Okay, so that's four things we've got in there.
So that's four reasonable things that sort of define me, and, you know, we could have a photo of us at Glastonbury and things, but I think, yeah, it's just, I don't want to open up a time capsule and just find four photos. It's like the Blue Peter one, it's just Blue Peter badges, a few coins, and an annual. It's sort of, no, we need something. So, yeah, so
it's well, a really I think nice maybe when you get old enough and you think to yourself, I just can't get to Glastonbury anymore, but I'd love to go and sit outside that bar. You'll know where the time capsule is.
Oh, right.
You can go and dig it up.
Yeah, 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 and I can have that experience.
You can sit
and I probably don't want to stay there for the music. I just want that Thursday. Yeah. I could just have a couple of hours. Well, that's nice. Okay, well, that's brilliant. What a great idea, Mike.
So what is it you want to put right at the bottom in its own little compartment and bury away?
Well, you gave me an idea. I'm not going to say what yours is, but you gave me an idea, and it was something that happened to me
It was probably the most painful and uncomfortable experience of my life. So that's what I'd like to put in. And I'd had a couple of urine infections about 10 years ago or something. And it's odd for men to get urine infections. They let you have one. After two, they just say, oh, that's not good. You know, you need to be tested. So you have all these dye tests and scans to make sure there's nothing odd going on. And then they need to look in your bladder. And they said, right, we're going to do a cystoscopy. So that's where they put a telescope in. And I said, okay, and do you do that under general anaesthetic or... He said, no. He said, most of the men... He lied. He said, most of the men... And he didn't lie, because most of the elderly men do have it done. Most of the men just have it done under local. I said, oh, fine, I'll have it done under local, because stupidly. Never again. So I went in, and I think a lot of the... You know, they are elderly men who have it done, and I'm not... I don't know, but it seemed to me a lot worse for me for some reason, whether that's to do with... how the pipes have changed with age or get a little bit more flexible. But anyway, the local anaesthetic is just a little tube of lignocaine gel. So that goes in, down the old John Todger. And that's that hurt. I'm not good with pain. And so you're lying there and it went, and in it goes. So this is what I want to put in my cystoscopy. So that went in and then they wait for that to work. Not long enough, I might say. Was it long enough? And then they put the scope in, straight in. And it's like, I just went, oh, scream. Oh, you know, scream. Try not to scream. It hurt like hell. And then they're poking around and it's a really visceral pain. So I can feel it now. It's sort of not only painful, but very uncomfortable. But, and I'm sure women have this 100 times worse when they have childbirth and cesareans under locum and things like that. But the idea that something's deep within you moving about and... So that's all going on, and they're going and chatting away and saying, all right, don't worry. He said, do you want to look at the screen? I said, no, I don't want to look at the screen. He had the screen, because he's doing all this, looking, not looking down, because they look at the screen. He said, no, all right. So he said, right, and we're just so, that's terrible. And it must have gone on for about a minute or two, maybe. Felt like 10 minutes. It was hellish. Oh, it's just deep pain, sort of, not pain, it was just uncomfortableness, but sore on the external bit. And then... to cap it all at the end, say, right, we're just going to fill up the bladder now, and they pump it full of water and give you even more pain, like the pain of really needing a wee. So I die, going, come on, you've got to finish it soon. Out it comes, they empty the bladder, and it's like a huge relief. And I stood up. He said, are you all right? I said, no. I said, if I ever have one again, I'll have a GA. I can't go through that again. I said, that was awful. And I stood up and he looked at me and I swear to God, he said, this doctor, the surgeon just said, he said, I think you need to go to the pub. I said, I think I do. And I did.
Test the bladder was still working.
Jeez, it was horrible. Oh. It was horrible. It was all clear as well. But yeah, just that fear of having to have a cystoscopy again. So I'd like to put in my cystoscopy that I had one sort of Tuesday afternoon in King's and then went over to the pub over the road, which was the Firkin pub. So that's what I'd like to put in.
You could put that in with pleasure.
Yeah, so that's another experience. So I put two experiences, part of a car, my medical certificate, and a ski boot. There you go.
That's lovely. Really nice things in there. I'm just glad that's gone in there, though, and I'm going to shut that tight because that's a horrible, horrible thing to go.
Yeah, but
the problem is, though, you were a doctor. You know, you're a qualified doctor, and it really, as part of your remit, I would think you should be encouraging people to have exploratory tests.
Absolutely, and I should be having them as well. Problem? And I think the same as all men, really, is any excuse not to have them done. You know,
yeah,
but, yeah, absolutely. But that's just me, and any woman you interview would always presume... No, they're not going to say it, because it's not, but if it was a man, they'd go, well, that first baby I had, I wouldn't want to go through that again. I wonder if women will. I bet they won't. I bet they'll just... Because they wouldn't, because it was so wonderful at the end of it. But maybe they might put in the pain they experience.
Yeah. But I've heard the other way, you know, that thing. And a fellow said to me, do you want anaesthetic or do you want a general anaesthetic? And I said, no. How long does it last? And he said, it'll be about 2 minutes. And I thought, well, I can stand it for 2 minutes.
But what's always given me the fear about that, this is, I don't want to put people off, but they give you something called midazolam, I think, that's what they used to do. And it's a drug that they give you that, it's really uncomfortable having an endoscope, you know, an endoscopy, like you're talking about, down the esophagus and into the stomach. And the idea of it is, because you've got to swallow it, haven't you? And the idea of it, to me, I just think that'd be awful. But they, you know, we give you midazolam. But midazolam works by
you're very aware of it at the time. I may be totally wrong here, but as far as I was concerned, you get post-traumatic amnesia. So although you're going through hell at the time, you don't remember it. Now, that's a concept for me is even worse. Is it? No, I can't have that because I'll be going, oh, my God, this is the worst thing. I know I'm going to be able to forget it afterwards because you're giving me this. But at the time, you're going, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible, this is terrible. And afterwards, you go, that wasn't too bad. I didn't know. It's okay. That's because you've forgotten about it because the drug has made you forget about it.
That's not fair. Perhaps I should have had that because I didn't have anything.
You remembered it.
And I remember it in complete detail. I remember the person saying to me, if you feel that you need to burp, because we are pumping air down there to open it up and everything, she said, if you feel you need to burp, then do. And I just burped, a continuous burp for about 2 minutes. And just burp. That's all I did for 2 minutes. And eventually she said, actually, it would be really useful if you didn't burp all the time. Anyway, there we are. That's it. Brilliant. So, Tony, thank you very much. It's really been lovely to find out the things you want to put in your time capsule. Thank you for being on it.
Thank you for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Tony Gardner. If you liked it, you can subscribe to this podcast on Acast or your own favourite podcast provider, and they'll send you a new episode every week. Just imagine that. If you have the time, we'd really appreciate it if you could rate us and write a short review. And you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook for all the latest about My Time Capsule. You just search at MyTCPod. Or you can follow me at Fenton Stevens on Twitter or at Mike Fenton Stevens on Instagram. My Time Capsule is a Cast-Off production. The producer was John Fenton Stevens, and the music was by Pass the Peas Music. Thanks for listening. Until next time, see ya.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.